Ever feel like your WordPress site is moving in slow motion? Switch to Kinsta's Managed Hosting for WordPress and watch it fly. Host your site on Google Cloud's fastest servers with worldwide data centers so your pages load instantly. Need help? WordPress experts respond in under 2 minutes and will migrate to your site for free. Try it yourself. First month free at Kinsta.com. That's Kinsta.com. Kinsta. Simply better hosting.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Well, hello, everybody out there. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the show where we talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, and whatever else we feel like talking about. I am Dan Suck, the editor of WindersComing.net, and I am here with Michael Patterson, the editor of our sister site, Bam Smack Pow, that covers all things superheroes. Michael, how are you doing today?
I'm good. July is my month. You know, Superman's out. Fantastic Four is out. As a fan of Jurassic World, it was out too. So, you know, I've been waiting for July. It's good to be back on the show. We were just talking. It's been like 4 years since I've been on the last time. The world was a very different place back then. The DCEU was a thing. This was before Marvel's so-called downfall. You know, lots have happened in the 4 years since, but it's nice to finally catch up on the pod.
The last time you were here, there was a pandemic on. Joe Biden was president. We were all just exploring this exciting new world. And here you are again, 4 years later, to talk about, as a superhero expert, obviously, there's a new superhero film in theaters called Superman, the latest in a long line of movies about this particular alien man. And I wanted you on because, as you all know, Daniel Roman is off for a few months to raise a human child. I wanted you on because you have expertise in this area. So thank you for bringing us your unique perspective.
Of course. Happy to be here. And I, as I've said to you already, you don't need to ask me twice to ramble about some superheroes. This is my moment.
Cool. And everyone else, good to see you. Hello, Victor. Hello, Ash. Hello, Martha. Hello, Victor again. I think I was like 8 years old in 2021. A lot's changed. Anyway, before we get into the main event, which is going to be Superman, I saw it over the weekend. I'm sure you saw it over the weekend or early, maybe. A lot of folk have seen it, and we're going to put it in context. We're going to tell you whether it is a worthy film. We're going to tell you whether it lives up to the standards set by previous movies in this area. We're going to tell you whether it can revive the flagging superhero genre. We're going to tell you whether it can save the world or will destroy it. But first, we're going to quickly visit the Seven Kingdoms, Westeros, as we usually do here on this podcast called Take the Black, to update you briefly on what's happening with House of the Dragon, the Game of Thrones prequel show that is currently filming its third season. And okay, God, I'm going to step in this because, Michael, you're from Northern Ireland rather than the U.S. of America, where I am. Do you know where Surrey, England is? Or is that not something a Northern Irish person would know? I don't know. I haven't been in a while.
Yeah, I mean, we know off Surrey. It's the you don't have to. You watch the news, you watch the soaps. Surrey's mentioned quite regularly, but it's a fair bit away from us over here in the Emerald Isle.
Perfect. Thank you for not getting mad at me for being culturally insensitive.
All good.
Anyway, HBO is filming scenes for House of the Dragon over in Surrey in the Hankley Common Nature Preserve. And again, they've been going very hard. They've been filming for months. And we're getting some really good footage, mostly courtesy of a Twitter account called House the Dragons. They're in this. Martha used to live in Surrey. You have the inside scoop, Martha. This is a big scene towards the end of the season, we think. This battle scene called the First Battle of Tumbleton. They've set up this big Hightower camp. The green means Hightower. That's the you know, the greens, the sides that are fighting against the blacks, Prince Queen Rhaenyra. They're fighting for King Aegon. Yada, yada, yada. They got the soldiers. They got the horses. They got the pavilions. They got the tents. They have the dragons. How do we know? Because there's a great image of a funny man dressed in a blue bodysuit holding up a dragon head. which the special effects wizards will go in later and edit things and make that look really cool rather than a little awkward. We just saw them wrap up a huge shoot on a battle scene called the Battle of the Gullet that will happen in the first episode. This battle scene will happen in the last episode, probably. I'm not 100% sure on that. They've also built this giant set for the town of Tumbleton over in Leveson Studios. They're really just spending the most and doing the most. These are expansive and impressive. You know what? I was a little let down by the second season of House of the Dragon for a lot of reasons I won't rehash here. But I will say, I do appreciate what looks like their commitment to spending tons of resources on this and just building the sets and hiring the guys and horses and making the dragons come. Like, I like that they are clearly spending time and effort on this.
Yeah, 100%. One thing you can never criticize the Cast of the Dragon or Game of Thrones for is its visual aesthetic. Like, even if you're not a fan of the storylines, the show is always going to deliver from a visual standpoint, and it certainly looks like season three is going to try to do the same.
100%. It'll probably be here sometime next year or even later, God forbid. But when it gets here, it will look great. Beyond that, not a whole lot else going on in House of the Dragon, Game of Thrones, Sons of Kingdoms world. There is a screenwriter, you might know the name, Mattson Tomlin, the guy who's writing The Batman Part 2. He's also working on a Game of Thrones prequel about Aegon's conquest. So that's the first Targaryens who fly into Westeros, kick everyone's asses and take over and make the Iron Throne and say, we're kings now, deal with it. The show isn't a guarantee to go forward, but we know he's been working on that one. And we know he recently turned in a script, and he's one of those like people who on Twitter likes to drop cute little hints about stuff. So he's dropping like little gifts of dragons and towers and saying script is done. So it's like, okay, maybe he finished that thing. Good for him.
Sure. Now it feels like we're finally moving forward to that, because I mean, like, you don't have to be like deep in the Game of Thrones fandom to know that the term Aegon's conquest, you do hear about it quite regularly. So it's nice to know. Maybe we're getting one step closer from the Game of Thrones franchise finally turning into the Game of Thrones cinematic universe, which I feel is like being this end game that they've been working towards for a long time.
Which, I mean, I have mixed feelings about, right? Because cinematic universe is, what's the history of them? You have something like Marvel, which was on the top of the world for a while and then kind of watered itself down. You have something like, I don't know, cautionary tales like the Dark Universe. Cinematic universes, I mean, you have the first DC cinematic universe, which kind of, in its rush to get out the gate, may have tripped over itself. And Ash, you lived in Surrey too. Everyone in our comment section used to live in Surrey. Okay, I'm glad. We have a very Surrey heavy comment section. Good for you guys. I like what they're doing with the Game of Thrones so far, because with a couple exceptions, it's a little different because no show like takes place at the same time as another, which I think is a strength. Because I think trying to combine everything so you have to watch the one thing in order to enjoy the other thing is part of what kind of hurt Marvel after a while, because it started to feel too much like homework. So if you're going to have a lot of Game of Thrones shows, I like that they're going to be all able to stand on their own. There's another one coming up next year called A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which is, you know, set decades after House of the Dragon, decades before Game of Thrones. No one from those shows is alive. Like, it's impossible to cross over. I think that's a good thing. I do not want that much cross-pollination here.
Yeah, 100%. Remember the era where we loved crossovers and seeing one character from one show appear on
another? There was a time we were into it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like the CW show is a perfect example. They did it really well in one episode, and at the next, you didn't have to watch those shows. You didn't have to watch the other show, and that was that. But you're right. Like, you won't find a bigger Marvel fan than me, but like, there's what, 36 movies and 12 shows at the moment. So like,
good God, are there?
By the time I started the MCU, that was a little bit of homework to do. Like, I shudder to think anyone trying to start it now. So yeah, like, I like cinematic universes in their place. Not everybody needs one.
I agree. And so far, I'm okay with what they're doing. Victor saying that we can do it again. We are beyond pandemics and strikes and the streaming wars seem to be settling in. That's true. Things are finally kind of calming down. I mean, give or take, we don't want to go too deep into it. Victor, did you ever live in Surrey? I want to know that too.
What if everything you've been taught about happiness is wrong? We chase careers, approval, more stuff, hoping it'll finally make us feel fulfilled, but it never sticks. What if happiness isn't out there, but already inside you, just waiting to be unlocked? Discover the book, The Happiness Experiment. Every person has a unique happiness type. And when you understand yours, everything shifts. You'll stop chasing and start creating joy on your own terms. Discover your happiness type with a free happiness type assessment. Go to myhappinesstype.com. That's myhappinesstype.com. It takes just a minute and it might change your life. Then grab your copy of The Happiness Experiment at Books A Million. This isn't just a book, it's a practical framework, a journey inward. It's a tool to help you reconnect with the happiness that's been waiting inside you all along. Pick up The Happiness Experiment and start your happiness experiment today.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Let's move on to the main event for this show, Superman. The film, the character, the legend, the superhero, the first original superhero, well, one of the biggest. Okay, Michael, first quick reactions. You saw the movie, did you like it?
I did. I absolutely liked it. Did you? I guess that's the next question we should ask.
I did. Yeah, I liked it. It was diverting. It felt like it was... how do I put this? Like, it had a unique stamp on it. It didn't feel completely cookie cutter and focus tested to death. James Gunn, the guy behind Guardians of the Galaxy, wrote and directed this. And you could feel his appetite for whimsy in it. But it still, I mean, obviously they want it to be a big mass market sort of thing that can be enjoyed by parents and their kids and the singles and everybody, and it checked that box too. I thought, yes, I enjoyed it. I was entertained the whole way through, and including Crypto the Superdog was a stroke of bloody genius, because everyone's going to walk away knowing one thing: it's that Crypto is very cute.
Yeah, 100%. If there's one thing we can take away from this movie, it's that it turned Crypto the Superdog into like a mainstream household name, which, I mean, outside of the DC fandom, not an awful lot of people would have known that. I agree totally. I feel like it was a great movie to start the DC franchise. It wasn't perfect, and I know I'm sure we'll get into some of that. There were sort of some of the stuff that maybe could have done a little bit differently, but in terms of wanting something a little bit different, it ticked all the superhero boxes, but it was also... A lot of people say it's kind of the kind of uplifting, hopeful movie we need right now. And there's no better superhero to label that on than Superman, because he's the original traditional superhero. That's what you want from Superman. And I think in terms of that, that's exactly what it was. I think if I could really sum the movie up in one word, it was a really triumphant movie. And I like my Superman movies triumphant. It's what you want. It's just like we like a dark Batman movie. That's what we've come to expect from that character. And we like a thought-provoking X-Men movie. We like a triumphant Superman movie. And I think James Gunn really understood the assignment.
Yeah, I agree. I also like a couple of these comments. So Victor says, it felt like my reaction to the first X-Men movie, a relief that it wasn't bad. I can feel that. Yeah. And I like Robert's question, because this was a big point of contention. Haven't watched movie yet. Is the new actor built for the role like Cavill? Because Henry Cavill played Superman in the last Man of Steel movie, good Lord, 12 years ago, and was the franchise mast bearer for a while. And there are still people who swear that he was the best one. He can't be replaced. To even try is sacrilege. Does, in your opinion, the new guy playing Superman, David Corenswet, who is an American, Sorry, I have this thing where, like, it's fine. Anybody from anywhere can play anybody. It just, for a while, and I've always told this to other Americans, so maybe now I can tell this to you and I can get the other perspective, where it's like, okay, so Henry Cavill, a British person, is playing Superman. Tom Holland, a British person, is playing Spider-Man. It always feels a little weird to me that there were British people playing superheroes who are very associated with America specifically, but maybe that's the jingoist in me talking. Any case, I was happy that David Corn-Sweat was not only an American, but also I think they did a very nice job. To answer your question, Robert, yes, I think he distinguishes himself from Cavill, because Cavill played it very serious and straightforward. David Corn-Sweat plays it a lot more, not broad necessarily, he's more whimsical, he's more grounded, he is not as intense, he kind of digs into the aspects of Superman that are just more like an ordinary guy, like going to work, making quips, but not in a way that came off as cheesy. I liked him a lot. I thought he was very appealing, approachable, affable, friendly, a good face for the franchise that, again, can be sold everywhere. Not as, there was something a little foreboding about Cavill's Superman, because he was so intense all the time, always, everywhere. And this one is more open and approachable, which I think fits with the character, and he did a great job pulling it off. What do you think? Was David Corn-Sweat a good Superman?
Yeah, 100%. Like Victor's most recent comment there, I completely agree with, about how during the interview with Lois, he just leaned forward and said, "Miss Lane," in the Superman voice. We kind of judge how good an actor is as Superman if they can pivot between Clark Kent and Superman. And he did that with such ease. His like Superman voice is much more like firm and deeper, whereas the Clark Kent one is a little bit more lighter and nerdy. Yeah, yeah. And I think ever since Christopher Reeve mastered that in those movies, it's every actor is kind of compared to that, and very few have gotten close. And I think he's done a great job. Is it too early to say as the leader of the franchise? The fan favorite leader of the franchise is always Batman, and the DC Universe doesn't have one of them yet. Like, as the original superhero in the new DC Universe, I definitely think he's done a wonderful job. And on your point about Henry Cavill, I think Henry Cavill had it within him to be a great Superman, and he was great for what
he got. He was good. Yeah.
I don't think the material served him that well, because like you said, it was always more serious, it was more foreboding. And in that universe, when you have a dark Batman, when you've adult characters like Peacemaker, you kind of needed the levity of Superman to lighten that out. And we weren't getting that from the DCEU Superman. This version of Superman has that in spades. It's everything you want from the character. It's the traditional version of the character, but with a modern twist. I do think David Corn-Sweat has it within him to become the definitive version of Superman, if not for this generation, but all in all. One person who always gets missed when we talk about the great Superman, who I will not miss, and if you know me, Dan, so you know why I won't miss him, Tyler Hoechlin, who played him in Superman at Lois, is the perfect embodiment of a modern Superman, because he had the seriousness of Cavill, but never lost that triumph, and that was the material. David Corn-Sweat leans more towards the triumphant side, and I do think if we get a few more titles with him in it, he very well could be the definitive version of this generation.
Yeah, I could definitely see if there are more Superman films with him made, and it looks like there will be, because this one is a success, by the way. It got a great box office returns in its first weekend, made back its budget. I'm sure it'll continue to do well. Because he's like a lighter, more frothy, more quip-worthy superhero in this version, I can see a movie down the line where things do get serious, and you really feel it, and you feel for him, because you know at his peak he can be a bit brighter and sunnier. So when things do get dark, and I think James Gunn is a guy who can take things dark if they do a Doomsday movie or something down the line, where it'll feel, I think, harder and more powerful, maybe because we've seen the other end of the seesaw.
Yeah, 100%. And you saw clips off it in the movie. Like, there's a specific scene where he goes in. I'm pretty sure it was in a preview, so it's not too much of a spoiler, but where he starts roaring at Lex Luthor when they first meet each other. And you can see there's like gravitas in that moment, because it's the first time you really have to see Superman be angry. And he nails it. He really nails it. There's something like horrifying about seeing this like uplifting, smiley character just absolutely lose it. And the movie definitely plays into like the what if that happened. And Lex Luthor loves to like channel that kind of fear and to justify some of the heinous stuff he does. And I think playing with that, Corin Sweat did a fantastic job. He truly is like a really strong Superman on all stretches of the imagination. And I know there was an awful lot of issues when it came to, could he be better than Cavill? Could he be like the same as Christopher Reeve? That was a big discussion, but I honestly think he pulled it off. I know Christopher Reeve had four movies and a whole generation to entertain, so we can't like maybe verge into that territory just yet. But heck, I think he's on track to doing that.
He's going to get a second chance, definitely.
Yeah.
What do people say? Martha asked if that was Scruffy in the movie as Crypto. My dog, who is not here right now, does look a lot like Crypto, honestly. Kind of uglier, but he looks a lot like Crypto otherwise. But no, it wasn't. But you know what I heard? Is that because of the movie, interest in dog adoption is way up. A lot more Google searches for it. And for that kind of dog, so I now basically own a Crypto lookalike. And I wonder if I can make money off that. I'll think about that later. Robert Harris asked, he liked Nicholas Holt as an actor. Did you like him as Lex Luthor?
I did. I remember when he was first cast, a lot of people were like, he's younger than your typical Lex. How did he pull it off? And like one scene and he nailed that. I thought he was brilliant. They always say a good superhero is defined by how good their villain is. And well, this Superman had a really good villain. So I think that's why it kind of evened out so well. Like when Nicholas Holt's Lex Luthor was on screen, you were paying attention and it was hard to look anywhere else because he commanded your attention. And I know a lot of people are hopefully excited at the prospect of maybe seeing him in future titles, because when you do movies, it's very hard to get a villain to come back because they're the villain of the one movie. How do you find a realistic way to bring them back? But this is a cinematic universe we're talking about, you know, so who knows? I thought all three members of the main cast,
I agree.
All three of them, David Corin Sweat, Rachel Brosnahan, and Nicholas Holt, all did a fantastic job. They're playing big iconic characters, and now there'll be rankings abound for where their performances ended in terms of the Supermans, the Lexes, and the Loises. And I think they'll all be pretty high because they did all did a great job.
I saw some criticism that the Lois wasn't, before I saw it, I saw some chatter that Lois wasn't very good. Richard Watson was kind of miscast. I didn't see that. I thought she did a really good job. She had good patter, good energy. I thought the casting straight through, I didn't really see any gaps. I liked everyone. I liked Nathan Fillion as Green Lantern. I liked Isabella Merced as Hawk Girl. The minor parts. I forget his name, but Edie, some of the G as Mr. Terrific. He was really good. Mm-hmm. I did not think there were any missteps in the casting. How about you?
No, none whatsoever. In fact, I just thought there were some like pleasant surprises. Like, I never thought that Mr. Terrific would be a standout in a Superman movie, just because Mr. Terrific and Superman aren't necessarily characters that the mainstream audience might associate with each other. But I agree with you totally. I thought he was a standout. He did a great job as that character. He is involved in one of my favorite scenes from the movie, which I'll not spoil, but like, it's such a James Gunn fun scene. It really is. And like, there was nothing about the cast in the movie I didn't like.
Nope, it all worked.
I thought they all did a fantastic job. And the movie was practically an ensemble piece. Like, there were a lot of characters in it. I know you have Superman at the front, but
not overpowered. Yeah. I was nervous when I heard about all these characters, like all the Justice Gang folk, their superheroes, and like, it felt a little blatant to me. I was like, oh, is this going to set up other movies in a really obvious way? I don't think it did. I thought it felt very natural, very rolled in. I wasn't distracted by it.
Yeah, same. Totally. I thought like there were a lot of different dynamics. See, there was the Justice Gang, there was the Daily Planet, there was the Kent Farm. So, and each of them brought their own supporting characters with them, and everyone played their purpose in the plot extremely well. And I agree. I thought I was worried about the Justice Gang of all of them, because they were, again, not necessarily characters that you would have associated being in the first of a Superman movie, because I feel like they'll have a big role in the DCU going forward. It was surprising to learn that they'd be so heavily involved in a Superman movie. Mm-hmm. But no, I thought they all played their part really well. They were involved in some of the most funniest and entertaining scenes of the whole film. And like, again, James Gunn's the person who gave us an ensemble of superheroes and Guardians of the Galaxy. So no one should have doubted him in terms of that, because we definitely got that fun from that group of heroes in this one.
Some great comments here. And then I want to ask about the flaws, because you mentioned some flaws, which I'm curious to hear about, because I'm not really sure I would point to a giant flaw. Anyway, Victor and others seem to agree with you about Superman and Lois. They like it a lot. Maybe I should watch that. I really haven't, but I'm glad to hear that really struck a chord with folk. Nico Bellic says there is a plot hole. Why couldn't Superman use his X-ray vision to see Ultraman's face? I guess my answer to that is, I don't know. didn't feel like it doesn't have it.
Plot armor, plot hole. I don't have an answer for that. The comic book expert does not have an answer for that. I can't really speak to that without giving spoilers, but I think that's an interesting point. It's one I didn't think of when we were watching the movie, but I guess that's the whole point of cinema. So do you want me to go into some of the it's very vague.
Michael, what did you hate about the movie Superman?
I hate it nothing. It hates a strong word. I did think occasionally it could maybe get a little too jokey just towards the final act. Like, it's a very entertaining, fun movie. We like seeing Clark Kent being dorky. We like seeing nerdiness or whatever. We like the jokes. But maybe it was just the fact that the Justice Gang played such a major role in it and jokes was their thing. And that even when things got more serious, there were still jokes. I like to watch these movies to be entertained. There's no doubt about it. But I just thought that maybe occasionally off the, like, say there were 10 jokes, maybe we could have just done 8 of them. We didn't need all 10. There's more than 10, but you get the point. I'm just, that's the ratio I'm using. We could have cut one or two of the jokes.
Sure.
I also, there's a part in the final battle that is, it's, the final battle takes place in like a darker location, which isn't that aesthetically pleasing, considering there's an,
I agree,
another part of the movie that takes place in a dark location. So, you know, we've seen Superman do battles in skies. It's not the most original thing, but again, this is the first DC Superman movie. So it might have been DC Universe Superman movie. So it might have been nice to see the final battle have more involvement in the sky. There's an awful lot of time on the ground. There's an awful lot of time below the ground. We could have just maybe had him in the sky a little bit more. He does fly through the movie and he is in the sky in the final battle, but you know what I mean. There should be flight, a little bit more flight. They're minor gripes. Like I won't lie and say that I didn't come away with this movie with a huge smile on my face. I thought it was, it did everything it was supposed to. But the further you get away from it, the analytics kick in and I'm like, maybe we could have cut that. Maybe we could have done or whatever. It's very hard to find a perfect movie. But like, it may not be a perfect movie, but it's a perfect movie for what the DC universe needed. Look, we're just off the back of a Jurassic World movie. That should still be dominating the conversation. And yet Superman has dominated the conversation for the last little while. I know Jurassic's still dominating the box office worldwide at least. But Superman, look at the story of Superman. It's overperformance in the US over the weekend. I think it had one of the largest Tuesday of the year yesterday, which is just insane for like middle of a week. Superman is still performing extremely well, particularly domestically. And it's no coincidence that positive word of mouth has had a large impact on that, because DC, aside from the DCEU, Joker, DC's had a lot of failures at the box office recently. It needed a win. Yeah. And if it needed a win, it needed to be this movie. And it looks like that's what we're on track to.
It's a success. And it's not just, I mean, there's a certain people who will come out to see any like big tentpole release. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this looks to have that and also positive word of mouth. I agree with you about sort of the dinginess of the location towards the end of it. I didn't mind it. It was interesting. I liked how the movie leaned into that kind of more kind of wacky comic book feel of alternate dimensions and that kind of thing. That was a bit new and just really went for it. But I agree, it wasn't beautiful to look at. Also, I mean, I don't even think this is a spoiler, because if you've seen a superhero movie, you know what happens. Like, does every superhero movie have to put like the entire world at risk? It's like every time the city have to like break apart and be sucked into the abyss. Like, I don't know. I wish if a screenwriter like finds themselves going to that place, just like maybe pull back a little bit, save something. And again, it's not a spoiler, because it's a superhero film. What else do you expect? We got some great comments here. As Victor's biggest gripe, well, he had two. I think the one that you didn't like, Mon Pa Kent, which I disagree with that. I liked them. I mean, they weren't like really huge parts of it, but I liked the dad's speech. Yeah, I really had no objections to Mon Pa Kent. Good old down home boyish. And that they didn't use the full John Williams theme, which was something else that I didn't notice. So I'll okay with that too.
Yeah, the newer version of the theme. I'm a big fan of the new take on the theme because sometimes it's just hard. It's hard to move on from the iconic Superman themes or the iconic Batman theme. The Dark Knight trilogy pulled it off by not using the Danny Elfman theme, but it's hard to move on from them. I'm kind of glad that Superman did have a new version of the John Williams theme. I agree. The version we heard in the trailer was much more epic than any of the versions that were used in the movie. There were a couple of scenes in the movie that could have went all out with the theme, but generally I feel like I'm glad to hear that music. It's like we're what, 7 Jurassic Park movies in, and you still hear that music and you still feel like a child. Superman has the same kind of impact once you hear that music. It's just like, oh yeah, I love this.
See, that's why you're on here. Like, all this talk, I didn't notice a thing about the music. I know the thing, that's about it. So I'm glad you're here to provide the details. I think it's about all I really want to say about it. Do you have anything else you want to say about Superman, the movie, the future, the past, the impact? Oh, I will bring up this. It is weird, or not weird, just interesting how different movies travel internationally. Like, you're right, this movie is doing boffo box office in the US, but I think like in China, it's doing like nothing.
Yeah.
Nobody wants it, but they do love dinosaurs tearing up Scarlett Johansson. In China, other parts of the world. It might go back to Superman just being associated with America. I'm guessing here. I don't know the answer to this. Whereas maniacal dinosaurs killing everyone is something that everybody can understand. But Superman, yeah. I'm not really sure what accounts for the difference. Some things just don't catch on in certain regions. And Superman is one of those things that I guess has deep American roots. That maybe it doesn't travel as well as something else might. Do you have any opinions on that?
It is. It's very interesting to say. And I feel like the releasing it directly after Jurassic World really did create an interesting comparison, because obviously Superman bumped Jurassic World off in the US to be number one. But around the world, Jurassic World is still outpacing Superman. This could just be a question of the two of them shouldn't have been released so close together. Maybe it was a risky move. I do think Jurassic World might have eaten into Superman's global box office a little. But it is interesting because I feel like more modern portrayals of Superman try to show him as more of a global hero and not just an American hero.
Sure. Yeah, that's true.
In the same way that DC changed the slogan, so it's not truth, justice in the American way anymore. It's truth, justice and a better tomorrow.
They don't like that.
Yeah. But like, I do think it's important to understand he's still doing well around the world, but it is interesting. It is interesting in places, particularly like China, which can really elevate a movie's box office because it's like a bigger market than the US is. It didn't seem to land. Whereas it's performing well in Europe and it's performing well in other locations, but it's nice to see that the overperformance in the US is making up for the slight underperformance around the world. So it's evened out all in all. So Superman should still be a success all in all.
Yeah. As Victor said, did Captain America do really well overseas? I'm looking at the box office returns now. And I mean, they are slightly better than the first movie. I don't know. We can't get into this. I'm sorry. I should have brought Maya details. Remember, we'll have some discussion sometime about, I don't know, sure, international versus domestic box office on certain things. But yeah, I agree. How interesting. Anything else you want to add about this film?
I feel like, to round things up, it's left me feeling excited for DC on movies for the first time in a very long time. Yeah. I am a big believer in the DC TV universe. I was a big fan of the Arrowverse and all those smaller DC TV shows. They're no longer with us, so... But in terms of shared universes, they did shared universes a heck of a lot better than the DCEU did at the time. That whole chapter has closed, and now we're under one DC umbrella. Two, technically, if you include the Batman, but we don't like to talk about the fact that there's still two of them. Generally, in terms of a DC universe, I'm really just excited for what's to come next. I know Peacemaker is an awkward place of kind of connected to the old DCEU, but also connected to the new DCEU.
Yeah.
That's just because that show was so successful. But generally, I'm just excited for what's to come from DC movies. And I don't think I've been able to say that since 2017 or something like that. So it's a nice time to be a DC fan for once.
I agree. So does Victor. It feels different than the last DCEU, he says. And that has me excited to want any more stuff now. Yeah. I agree. They're in a great place. I would watch a Supergirl movie starring Millie Alcock as a messy drunk of an irresponsible dog owner. That was fun. I'd watch that. Poster drop the day. That looked fun. So yeah, they now have momentum and it'll be fun to watch them succeed for a while and then get cocky and screw it up in a few years down the line. I'm looking forward to the whole journey.
Yep. The DC cinematic or the cinematic universe pipeline always ends the same. But here's hoping we get a good few years out of it first.
Exactly. We'll take as much as we can get. All right. We can talk about that more if you have other thoughts, but let's move on in our little outline here because there's been quite a few things happening. So Superman, biggest movie of the year, biggest TV show of the year, may prove to be the fifth and final season of Stranger Things. God, how long ago did the fourth season come out? Was it 2022?
It was, yeah. Yeah. And again, we just talked about gaps between seasons. It's wild, right?
They took their sweet time because they can, they know they're one of Netflix's biggest hits and they know they're able to take as long as they want and that they know Netflix will acquiesce whatever they say. Mm-hmm. But they finally put out a teaser trailer, which, by the way, I kind of hate the teaser trailer versus trailer distinction all the time. Just like, it's 2.5 minutes of footage. Just call it a trailer. Whatever.
Yeah.
They put out a teaser trailer for the final season, the first footage we've seen. And I thought, what if we just looked at it and gave our opinions either while it's happening or afterward? And we can say pause if we want during it, but we don't have to. We can do whatever we like. Sure. So... let's hit it. Yes, I agree. The boys in the cast are now fighting receding hairlines. I certainly am not. I watched the trailer. It's fun. It looks good. They don't give much away, which of course they wouldn't. They want you to give up your Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's Eve to watch these things. So they're going to make you wait for the big surprises. But, I mean, initial reaction is it looks like Stranger Things. It looks moody. It looks dark. It looks 80s as hell. The gang's all there. Mm-hmm. Fun. Grim. Mysterious. Twinkling lights. Are you going to watch this show when it comes out?
Oh, hell yeah. Absolutely. I miss my Netflix era where I would watch more Netflix shows, but this is the one that stayed with me. I've been in the trenches with this show since the very beginning, and you know I'll be there at the end. And, yeah, it looks like season 4 felt like Stranger Things the movie because it went so large. From what we've seen from this trailer, it feels like we're going to go even larger.
They are in a position where they can afford to think about fancy stuff like legacy rather than just getting out new episodes to entertain people. So the hope is this will be good enough to make it worth the wait and that posterity will be kind to the series, even though people had to wait 3 years in between stuff. Yeah, upside down people. Lots of red. Love the color red.
Yeah, yeah, very apocalyptic looking, but what we wouldn't expect anything else from Stranger Things. It's nice to see you can see some Demogorgons and Demodogs again, so it looks like we're getting the greatest hits of all the villains from the previous seasons, which that's what we love in a final season.
Okay, by the way, pause it on that women in the water tank. So I watched the trailer. I knew about everything. I liked Eddie Munson's grave, like telling you he's not coming back. Get over it. Do you know who this is?
Is the woman at the back, is that Mike's Mrs. Wheeler, Mike's mother?
That's what I thought. But I was like, what is she? I didn't know she was involved in like the capers.
I know. I feel like I assume it's because now the Upside Down's cracked into everywhere in Hawkins that the whole town's going to get involved. Like the best kept secret, I suppose, is finally out there now. But yeah, are they hiding from something? Is this related to what Eleven always does when she gets into the water? Who knows?
Right? That's what I was thinking. Yeah, it was weird. It was like, I was like, who is it? Mike's mom? Yeah. Mike's mom is now part of the crew. And I guess that's the little sister. Good for them.
Yeah.
Mike's family. I'm sure you're all right. I just didn't expect her to. I don't think that's in it because Linda Hamilton's hair is shorter because there's shots of her too. Anyway, hit it. Of course, there's got to be some badass rejoinder lines said. You got to have a stinger in a trailer. Let's end this kid. Yeah, all right. Okay, cool. But yes, I will certainly watch the Dickens out of this. There we go. Let's end this kid.
Yeah. We're ready for it. Here we go. Big explosions.
Got a montage. Got a montage of no shot lasting further than a half second.
Yep.
Kicking a syringe off. Explosions. Pooper's out of the ground. You got to see it.
Yeah, they're showing us everything and nothing all at the same time. Here he comes.
Found you. Oh my God. Oh, chills. You found me? Yeah, I'm into it. I'll watch it. Do you agree with Victor that Stranger Things is the last monoculture event series?
This is an interesting thing. I feel like no show can really grind the world to a halt in the way that it did. And every time it comes back bigger, and not just in terms of scale, but in terms of like buzz. Because like after the after season three, they promised us it would, or we had to wait, what, 3 years? And people were dragging it for waiting so long. But the minute it hit, we all tuned in, we all watched it. It was a cultural phenomenon. It feels that kind of like how Game of Thrones used to feel. The Walking Dead, maybe its first two seasons generated a similar kind of buzz as well. Breaking Bad and its final few. There's not many shows like that anymore. And I feel like Stranger Things is one of them. The only good side of it being off the air for most of its run is that anytime when it's back on the air, everyone tunes in. It never got a chance to grow stale in the way that a show, a network TV show that was on for 10 full seasons would have. Like Stranger Things will still draw the audience even if it's been on the air for 10 years.
It will. I don't feel like they can't make a monoculture show today. I feel like it's possible, but it does. I'm not sure anybody's doing it quite correctly. Mm-hmm. The last big one, which is an interesting case study, like everybody was talking about Squid Game that first season when it came out in 2020. God, one was it? I don't remember. And the second and third season sort of passed without a ton. There was buzz. There was chatter, but there wasn't a monoculture event level of chatter. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Stranger Things has managed to sustain itself. It feels like the people at Warner Bros. Are aiming for monoculture with something like Superman. I feel like that's what they want. Mm-hmm. They want mass cultural penetration. And they want you to hang on every cliffhanger and every event and come back for the next thing. It's hard to engineer that these days, but I think it's possible. I just think people need to learn the new language, and I'm waiting to see who does it next.
Sure. It's interesting when there's shows on so many shows and they're so large scale, and it's like everyone's like, look at my shiny show, and when there's so much to go around, it gets a bit divided up. Because like The Last of Us, for example, really, really, really generated a lot of buzz in its first season. Season two did have a lot of buzz, but it felt like even though it was a shorter run, by the time it was over, not as many people were talking about it. Maybe again, the 2 year wait might have impacted that. I feel like if there's a recurring theme of this episode, I'm going to keep bringing up the large wait between seasons for these shows. Because I grew up a network TV baby, and you had 2 months when that show was off the air and then it came back on. Whereas in today's day and age, it's like, whereas nowadays, it's like you have to wait like three years sometimes for a season of 6 episodes. And I think the longer this era goes on, people get more frustrated by that. And that can maybe ensure that a second season of a show doesn't have the same impact that a first one. So even if a first season is a cultural phenomenon, the show might not be for its whole run, because just interest might die off with the long waits.
But again, like, there are exceptions. Stranger Things, the gaps are longer than usual.
Very long.
And people are still cued into that. What about Severance? How about that? Do you think that is like kind of approaching? I wouldn't call it monoculture yet. It's not TV Plus, which like 8 people have. But it was definitely really buzzed about. It was a second season that was maybe even more buzzed about than its first, which is rare nowadays.
Very, very. I know, I feel like I didn't even hear that show existed until season two was about to premiere. Maybe that's just over on my end of the world. But by the time season two started, everyone was talking about it. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those shows that stayed in the public sphere, even when it's not been on. People continue to talk about it. They anticipated the new season. So I feel like it kind of graduated into one of those shows. It'll really be interesting to see if it can kind of hold on to that buzz, however long it goes on for.
Mm-hmm. And as Victor says, they definitely want that with the Harry Potter TV show. Oh, yeah. I feel like Warner Bros. Especially is trying to manufacture monoculture shows. Between Superman, the Harry Potter show is definitely an attempt to have a ton of people tune in and have like a big mass media event. Will it succeed? We'll find out in the Wick News Lightning Round when we bring it up a couple of times.
Yeah.
For now, let's move on to our next segment, which is pretty informal. Hey, Michael. Hey, people watching. What are you watching?
What am I watching? I feel like I'm the comic book expert here. So is it
or reading?
Yeah. Is it predictable off me to say Ironheart, the Marvel's most recent show, which just dropped?
Yes.
I just wrapped it up. Yeah, exactly. The reason I bring it up specifically is because it genuinely surprised me. That show was filmed in 2022 and we've been waiting for it for 3 years. The buzz, they missed their window. It kind of died off. So nobody was particularly excited about it. I feel like the show deserved a little bit better from Marvel than that. Mm-hmm. I have to say I really enjoyed it. Maybe it's because they dropped in kind of a binge format so that you drop three episodes, the first three episodes and the second three episodes. So it didn't air weekly. It was one of the shortest runs Marvel's ever had. But it worked. It worked really, really well. I thought it was really entertaining. And there are some things in the second half of the series that will have an impact on the MCU going forward, which is not something I thought I'd be saying about Ironheart of all shows, because it was a spin-off character from Black Panther, who was a spin-off character from Iron Man. So people didn't really know what to expect from the show, but everywhere I see it, you see the typical hitters trying to drag the show. So I have a platform right now, sure. So I wanted to take a few moments to kind of give it a little bit of love. It surprised me and I really enjoyed it.
Rock on, Ironheart. I did not watch it because I was one of those who, like, it's on now. I forgot about the show completely. I'm glad to hear it was good. Victor says he's pleasantly surprised by Foundation season 3, which I hear is pretty common. I hope to have a Foundation episode one of these weeks while the show is on, so look forward to that. I got to catch up on it. I started to read the second book in the Three Body Problem trilogy, The Dark Forest, the other night. The first chapter is told from the perspective of an ant overhearing some of the characters talk about scientific things, so that was fun. And also, I'm really enjoying The Sandman on Netflix. I got the screeners for the rest of the season, and I like how the show is taking its time and taking really bizarre esoteric concepts fairly seriously. I'm enjoying that series. Have you ever watched it?
Now I'm going to say something unpredictable. As the comic book fan here, I haven't watched The Sandman. I should have watched it. I missed my window. Was it in summer 2022? But I've only ever heard good things about the show. It sounds like it's a real immersive experience.
I
did watch the spin-off, Dead Boy Detectives, and really, really enjoyed it. So I probably should. Because the show is ending this time around, I kind of want to complete it or watch it, because I feel like if I don't tick that box now, I'll never get around to it. But yeah, everyone I've talked to about that show seems to love it. So I feel like it's not really, it's kind of a DC show. And it feels like it's the last one from that former DC TV era. So maybe I should give it a go because everyone seems to love it.
I'd be curious to hear your opinion on it. But I feel like it would be a good binge the whole thing kind of show when it's over at some winter in the future. But we have a lot of TV to get to around here, so who knows if that's ever going to happen. All right, Michael, now that we're getting toward the end, let's go on to our final segment, the Wick News Lightning Round, where we blast through several stories we didn't have time to get to in the main body of the show and give our 20-second opinions on them. No more, no less. You talk for more than 20 seconds, you lose. You talk for less than 20 seconds, you lose. You talk for exactly 20 seconds, you win. What do you win? Nothing. But
no,
except
pressure.
For bragging rights. Actually, talk for as long as Richard will tell you if you talk too long. I did not really order these, and I'm not really sure what you might know or might not know about. But if you're asked a question you don't know about, just blabber incoherently for 20 seconds. It's the same result. You don't even know anything. Okay. I'm going to ask you first. Okay. Michael, 40 seconds on the clock. George Lucas, creator of Star Wars, will appear at San Diego Comic-Con for the first time in his career.
I tell you, I was genuinely surprised to read that. I do know about that. When you think of Comic-Con, you think of these big franchises, you think of Star Wars, you think of Marvel. So George Lucas is a name associated with them. I was genuinely surprised not to hear or to hear that he had never appeared at one before.
Yeah, me too.
There's a first time for everything, right? So this is George Lucas's moment. Right on time. Perfect. Look at me go.
That's great.
Oh, yes, I forgot. So, okay, Murderbot has been renewed for season 2 at Apple TV Plus.
Yeah, Murderbot. I'm not sure if you watched or heard about this, but it was this sort of not too publicized sci-fi series on Apple TV Plus. Apple loves sci-fi so much. It was nice. It was one of the Skarsgårds as like a self-aware robot who's very sarcastic, just like human beings, but secretly he kind of does. It was pretty funny. It was well made. It was digestible. It was like a half hour episodes. I liked it and I'm happy I've lost. Okay. I'm not sure if you know about this. I'm just going to ask and see what happens. Commenters are talking about Outlander Blood of My Blood, the upcoming Outlander prequel. And the trailer revealed that Claire and Jamie's parents, who were born a century apart, knew each other through the magic of time travel.
What can you even say to that? I don't know about Outlander, but the more I hear about it, I've heard little snippets over time, and the more I hear about it, the more wild and bonkers it sounds. I mean, like, that's not the craziest thing I've probably ever read about Outlander, so I mean, like, it doesn't surprise me, but at the same time, it does surprise me. So yeah, fair play to them. Like, time travel. We love time travel.
You're good at this.
Right on the money. We did mention the HBO's Harry Potter show a little while ago. So HBO's Harry Potter does start shooting soon. And here's Dominic McLaughlin as Harry.
Yeah, it's really happening, man. Part of me can't get my head around the idea that they're really doing this. Like, the movies aren't that old. They're going to make a whole new show. And I know that there's controversy around J.K. Rowling. I know that there's people wondering why we need this. They're determined for it to be big. And honestly, I think it probably will be.
Yeah, definitely.
I think they're making the right moves to make what they want. Speaking of the Harry Potter show, because there's a little multiple news here. Okay, this was unconfirmed, but the source is one that I trust. We're not even intelligence. They say that HBO is hoping to film seasons back to back, with hopefully the goal of releasing one season a year of the Harry Potter show.
Yeah, this doesn't surprise me, because we just talked about the Stranger Things issue, and we have these shows with younger casts, and when this take breaks between these huge big budget seasons, the casts do age. That's a fact of life. They grow up. And cast of the Harry Potter movies grew up as well, of course, over the 7 movies. So I feel like this is a way to prevent that, but also hopefully if the seasons are filled in, we shouldn't have to wait so long between seasons.
Smart.
Now, another show we talked about earlier on, The Last of Us, Season 3, is coming in 2027, Casey Bloys confirms.
So this is the opposite. This is, it's going to take its sweet time getting to us. And look, I will watch it when it comes. Why can a show like Stranger Things have people enthusiastic for it when it takes 3-year breaks, but a show like Last of Us can't? I'm not sure there is an answer to this. It's a weird alchemical thing people don't seem to figure out. I wish it's coming sooner, but at least it's coming.
Yeah.
Okay. This was pretty big news today. Again, I don't know if you're a gamer like this, but I'm going to ask you and we're going to find out. They announced today that young British actors named Bo Bragason and Benjamin Evan Ainsworth will play, respectively, Princess Zelda and the heroic Link in the live-action Legend of Zelda movie, which is a thing that's happening.
Yeah, I know the Legend of Zelda movie is happening. I've heard constant updates about it, but no, I'm not a Zelda fan, so I don't have too many thoughts. I do know that the fan casting was a big thing and that people were trying to cast certain actors in certain roles. And now that we finally have it out, I'd be interested to see the buzz. But yes, no, it sounds like I'm being blasphemous by, as a nerd, saying I don't know much about Zelda. But I know it exists. That's enough.
Cool. It is enough. And finally.
HBO gets a record haul of Emmy nominations at 142. Wow. Severance is also the most nominated series of the show with 27 nominations. Thoughts?
Severance definitely did make its mark this year. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that become a monocultural show. I think HBO, no one's ever gotten that many before, 142. So good for them. Lots of Last of Us. I'll just go to Ash and throw a bone there and say, I wish The Wheel of Time was nominated for more things. I missed that show. I'm sad it's canceled. And the Emmys, awards, hooray. Okay, I thought that went pretty well.
Me too.
Good.
We did good. We made a good team, right?
Yeah. We did such a good show. I thought the commenters did really well with leaving comments. Great job, everybody out there. I thought you did well talking. I think me did well talking.
Yep.
I think Richard did a great job producing.
Yep.
I think this was a fantastic show.
I had fun.
Great. All right. If you want to see more of us, we stream new episodes of Take the Black Live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, or 3 p.m. on the East Coast and noon on the West Coast and one of the mountains, and I suppose 8 p.m. in Northern Ireland, where Michael Patterson is right now. Please come back, Michael says. You know what? We were talking about you coming back for Fantastic Four, that show, which we could use your expertise on.
Next week,
though, who knows? Tune in and find out. It'll be a mystery. Also, download us wherever we can download stuff, whether it be iTunes, Google Play, YouTube Music, wherever. Thanks for watching. Michael, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. I promise it won't be 4 years next time.
It'll be 2 weeks max. See you then, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye, guys.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.